This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Oh, holy night. Stars are up. Brightly shining, it is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoicing, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
One guy who knows it's Christmas. They're bringing you the holiday spirit as only we can. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It is 29 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of December in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. Draw near that ye might be amused and entertained. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. America's new home for family fun and quality. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, and welcome to day 12. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be a part of today's program with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ponderings, ruminations, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have, that is how you can join us today. It's 503-505-6964. 6-4. First message right out of the gate, by the way, I'm looking down, and it just says, I have been waiting all year for this song. Thank you, Rick Emerson. No, sir. Thank you. That, in fact, is the method by which the Rick Emerson Show thanks everyone. We play that song for them. So it's what we do. No need for further hosannas in my direction. I get the warm glow of your appreciation, sir, and that's enough. If you want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor, who is not in attendance today, we will talk to her in just a few moments, though. She can be emailed if you like. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. In the stead of Dawn Taylor today, our good friend Mr. Eric D. Snyder joining us again. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. It's.
I don't hear anything.
Are your headphones, in fact, turned up?
Yes. Oh, there we are.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
It's the details that'll get you sometimes.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
How are you? How are you on this fine Friday?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Not glad for the circumstances under which I'm here.
I'm just going to sit here and watch you just to paddle around in that quicksand.
I'm very glad that Don's husband is ill. I've been waiting for this for a long time.
And because you've led a virtuous life, God has answered your
exactly.
prayers.
Exactly. Yes.
Miracles can come true, Eric. Earlier today, you're really doing, everybody here is doing like double and triple duty today.
Yeah.
So you did Movie BS with Baron Snyder over at Cascadia.fm this morning.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Then you hopped into your car and onto your Vespa and you sped. I don't know what I picture you driving. I'm trying to, it's not like a Prius. It's like a Civic. It's something really practical. It's like a Civic or an Accord.
It's a 94 Geo Prism that a friend of the family gave to me for free 5 years ago.
Okay, well, there you go. What is with you and Dawn and free cars?
I don't know. We luck into our free cars, I guess.
I think Dawn is now on the second free car in like 2 months or something.
She's got good karma.
Here's the thing.
I'll leave now.
No,
I'm sorry.
Because you're filling in and working for free, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Okay.
So that's the thing where we're going to look in opposite directions, and we're just going to take a moment. Yeah, all right. That didn't happen.
Never speak of it again.
In any event, so this may or may not be Dawn, who's on the phone right now. So we'll check the phones in just a second. I think that's probably her. We'll find out about the latest with her husband, Patrick. So you did the Movie BS with Baron Snyder and then came over here to do this. So thank you for pitching in.
Absolutely.
Last hour, Legion of News, our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig, who will rejoin the program here in just a moment. He's going to do Comedy 101 later on today, talking about the life, career, legacy of Carol Burnett, and also just adding to the general air of merriment and whimsy that is filling the studio today. Here's the thing about that, by the way, that Oh Holy Night. You asked me who it was, and it's like some of the best things on the show. It just arrived one day.
You just found it on the doorstep?
No, it's just like somebody just sent it to me like, here, you are to listen to this. You know, Bob. And it's just like there was no information, though. I know it's not Adam Sandler. I think that's about because everything online that is like that gets labeled Adam Sandler.
Right.
It's not, but we don't have any other information. It is a companion piece. It is a polar twin to this recording, which I might actually play to bookend of the show later on just to sort of take us out on the holy tip. It's this guy unleashing the most righteous version of Amazing Grace you have ever heard in your life, and I think he's a crackhead.
Wow.
And I say that because the timbre and tone of his voice, his mannerisms, are just like those of Orlando Jones in Office Space when he's doing I used to be addicted to crack, now I sell magazines. Imagine that guy, really high, and like maybe like if you whacked him a few times with a frying pan in the back of the head, like when he was young, and then put him behind a microphone at a church and let him sing Amazing Grace with no one around to stop him. I know I'm not
nice.
Overselling it, too, because it's glory. However great you might be thinking it is, it's so much better.
I need to send you the link to there's a song about 9/11 that someone did that is...
Is it that we got to stop the mosque at Ground Zero song?
No, it's... It's about, I can't remember what it's called now, but it's talking about a guy who was on one of the planes. He was taken, Daddy We Go Fly.
Oh, God.
He's taking his daughter to Disneyland.
Oh, God. And
yeah.
then they don't go to Disneyland. They make an unexpected stop in New York.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
It's a great song.
Oh, it's not too soon.
Because it's so terrible.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
Look, you either got to laugh or cry, Jim.
Make your choice.
You can't cry. You were Tobin Bell just there.
Make your choice.
Okay, that's a little freaky. Final thought, and then we'll tease the headlines. We'll go to the phones where I think Dawn is waiting for us. You know, I interviewed Tobin Bell one time, and I asked him if he ever used that voice to freak people out. You know, live or die. And he said, I swear to God, that he coaches children's softball. And he said that occasionally he'd be like, you know, the second base coach, or he'd be behind the batter,
And he'd, you know, and you know, or he'd be out there and he would just be like, you know, be like, run or steal, make your choice. You know, which is sort of great. I mean,
that's fantastic.
Warp 'em young. That's my motto. Coming up later on today, we have your clown watch, I believe. You know, just as though Dawn were still here. Top five coming up, and then Humor Me, Comedy 101 with Big Jim Willig. And then Mr. Eric D. Snyder, you are tracking the following headlines for us on this Friday.
Senate begins debate on the tax cut bill. Portland cops bust a $3.1 million pot ring, and a two-year-old gets trapped inside a claw machine at the mall.
A claw machine? Oh, like the crane?
Well, like the crane, yeah, where you choose a prize, yeah.
Please tell me this happened just moments ago, and it's breaking news, and there's going to be footage of the kid pounding on the glass.
Sadly, no, she's already been rescued.
Damn you!
Spoiler alert.
All right. So that's all coming up here in just a few, and so forth. Today's Rick Emerson program brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages at 3713. Southeast Hawthorne, that is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is where you can find Sorrell's Vintages. Tell the proprietor, Daniel, that you heard it here on the Rick Emerson radio program. They are right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books, a fantastic place about whom we will... About which. Thank you. We will talk more later on in the hour. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. I believe this is our good friend Dawn Taylor. Hello, Dawn Taylor.
Hello.
Hi.
Your timing is awesome. A doctor just walked in the door just as you were picking up to put me on the air.
Ask him about this rash that I've got all up and down my my right leg.
No, I'm not going to ask him about your rash.
Okay.
I can call in back in later in the show, or I could just turn on the speaker and you could listen to the doctor talk to my husband about his kidneys and such. But you probably don't want to hear about that.
Well, here's the thing. That's the thing that I would say yes to unreservedly. I mean, without, but that might end up being a thing that you regret. Regret offering.
Do you think it'll be funny?
I would hope so. It could be something horrible. And then you would be sad.
Well, I mean, so, you're talking kidneys, you're talking pee, and I mean, right there, you're in the vicinity of poo, and poo is hilarious. But you know, we should err on the side of caution, probably.
I will say this: he did have finally got his Jell-O today, and boy, he's been looking forward to the Jell-O because Patrick loves Jell-O. So it's a red letter day, really.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you we will be here until like around 3 p.m. or so, give or take. So you call us back at a time that works for you. And is this the number you're going to be calling from?
Yes, unless Skype actually works.
Okay. So tell you what, we'll be here. You call us whenever it works out for you, and we will talk then. Until then, just give Patrick a playful chuck on the shoulder for us.
I will indeed.
All right. Thank you, Dawn.
Bye.
All right, there you go. That's Dawn Taylor, ladies and gentlemen. All right.
So. Guess she'd rather talk to the doctor than us,
fine,
apparently.
Fine. Talk to the guy who went to medical school and might be able to cure your husband's strange affliction.
Whatever.
You know, that's fine. That's okay. I'm used to being shunned. Doesn't matter. Hey, real quickly, before we do anything else, I should say, and I don't know, we should just bring on Mr. Jim Willig, who's in the studio here. Hello, Jim Willig.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fan-diddly-tastic.
Did you say that you've just been wearing the Santa hat around ever since you saw the Scrooge thing with Court and Bobby?
That is true, yeah. It is one of my all-time favoritest holiday movies. I feel it's woefully overlooked in the lexicon that is all of Bill Murray's awesomeness. I mean, they played Bad Santa last year for 24 hours straight. The crappy TBS edited version.
Yeah, what's the point of that?
Yeah,
you're watching it on TV.
That's useless. Yeah.
Scrooge has a really good, solid message. It doesn't get cheesy. It legitimately, I mean, you see Bill Murray legitimately moved at the end of that movie. Every time I see it, I get choked up, and I remember that, yes, you can get laughed at or mocked for loving the season, but you know what? At the end of the day, you know, if you want that feeling, get greedy for it and let it last all year long.
Now, I'm a big nerd for Christmas, as we always say that. In fact, as we speak, I swear to God, literally, as we speak, Cheryl Kanakoa is in the kitchen right now, and she is decorating the Christmas tree that is in the break room.
Shackled to the tree.
And it's like a thing that, you know, we were going to do this whole thing earlier on in the week, and then Patrick had to ruin it, as he always does.
Way to go, Pat.
Ruining everything.
That guy.
But it's like he timed it.
You're
just deciding the right moment to unleash this alleged kidney failure. But we were going to do this whole thing earlier this week of, like, stringing, you know, the tree, you know, just decorating it, whatever. And but the tree has just sat there, just sadly. We went to Christmas Mountain Trees. We got it. We put it. And then somebody, I think it was Sarah yesterday, she was like, She's like, so is this, like, do you not decorate the tree, or does it, why, it's just here? And she sort of looked at it, but she looked at me like I was maybe trying a new holiday tradition of just, you know, like I was going, like, the, you know, just sort of the naked tree, you know, they, like, you know, like, it was, like, I was going to go, like, it was a new, fresh approach to it. And so I was, Cheryl actually, the same day, she's like, are we going to do something with the tree? Because it's just sort of sitting there and people think we're weird. So she is in the kitchen right now because I cannot possibly get enough of Christmas. So I'm a huge fan.
Because bringing a tree inside the house and not putting anything on it, that's weird.
Then it's totally bizarre.
That's weird. You bring it in and put decorations. Now that makes sense.
My wife and I were talking about this last night. That it's like just another one of those things where you sit. It's, you know, it's the things where you sit and you just think about how weird it is. That, like, you have part of a forest just, like, in your living room.
You drag it inside your house.
With a small pan of water underneath it and a bunch of electrical lights hooked to it.
Which, from, by the way, from which my dog has been drinking. I couldn't figure out why. I couldn't figure out why the tree. I mean, I know that they take water and they do whatever. And, you know, if a freshly cut tree, it's going to, you know, it's going to bring the water, you know, up into the root system faster than, you know, whatever. Because they don't, you know, they're not, like, lacquering it or something like they do some of the lots. But I thought, well, that doesn't possibly, you know, I can't explain why the thing is just empty all the time. So my dog is like, and I know I'm a guy telling a dog story. Do you have dogs, Eric?
I love dogs, but I don't have one, no.
All right, well, on this show, we can just fall into telling dog stories just, like, forever.
I'm sure.
And I try not to do that very often, but I got to tell you, my dog is very much, he's like that, what is it, the Aesop's fable thing of the dog and the bridge and the bone and the reflection of the other dog with the better bone? He is, here's how dumb and yet evil he is. We found out the best way to get him to eat something, because he's on a diet, because he's a corpulent little bastard, and so he doesn't like to eat the diet food because it's just flavorless. I mean, it's basically just like pencil shavings that they've compressed into pellet shape. And he's just like, well, F this. You were giving me ham last year. What is up with you? And I'm like, I'm sorry, man. You're on a diet. It's not me. It's the man. And he's like, well, hell with that. I'm not going to eat. And then he just sits and stares at me with, like, these dead, soulless, evil shark eyes.
Look at those eyes.
Exactly. We figured out that the way to make him eat the diet food is to, and I hate to be using my other dog as a pawn like this, but to just give it to the other dog. Because then Max, to give it to our other dog, Philo, who is just hapless and just one of nature's special creatures. kind of like a child who isn't terribly bright but means well.
Right.
And so we just give it to Philo, and Max immediately, and Max, who is like 1/8 Philo's size, go in and just body checks him out of the way. And so that's great. Boop. Out of the way, and then whatever it is, I want it because it's yours. So that's the thing with the water under the Christmas tree, that apparently Max has just been going underneath the tree and just, you know, it just tastes like needles and dirt. And I mean, there's just no reason for it except that he thinks he's not supposed to have it, and so therefore he's been consuming it.
I am glad that you found a way to outsmart your dog. Well done on that.
It's taken some time, because I got to tell you, it's like somebody just took, like, Stewie Griffin and just made him into covered him in fur. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever.
It sounds like he's done some time, like it's a prison dog. Like, you know, like he just walks up and takes your fruit cup.
The thing is, it's like the family we got him from. He's like a second chance dog, where it's like it's a website for families that are like they have a dog, and it's like it's just not working out. And it's not where it was like a blended family where, like, mom gets the new husband and the whatever, And I felt really bad because it was the daughter's, you know, this is years ago we got him, but Max was the daughter's dog. Aww. And so she had to give him away because mom gets a new husband. The new husband has a bunch of huge dogs, like a bunch of big, like, you know, German shepherds and, you know, like a Rottweiler and whatever. And Max is a tiny little puffball. I mean, he's like a little ball of Kleenex. But he immediately developed like this Napoleonic complex, like you would not believe. The most serious danger, the most serious problem we've ever had with him is when he attacked the Rottweiler down the street. The Rottweiler
with
took
a shiv.
He just went after him, man, and the Rottweiler like punctured the roof of his mouth and like snapped off, you know, two of my dog Max and Max like lost a couple of teeth.
Wow.
But he was like, but it's like we were going to get the jaws of life to get him off that thing, and it's like he's the size of a football. It's just it's retarded. He just doesn't, you know, he's just. He's dense in that way, whereas my other dog is just, you know, it's like we're gonna have to fit him with a helmet and a drool cup, you know, to get through his life. You could seriously, I don't ever say this. This is I try not to be this guy, but really, are you online over there? You got your magical iPad?
Yes. Yeah.
I hate to be this guy, I'll do a little bit of business here while you look this up, so everybody doesn't have to hear me tell a dog thing again. Go to rickemerson.com/pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the catalog marked Our Pets. There's a little photo album there marked Our Pets. It's rickemerson.com/pictures, and then it's Our Pets.
Oh, I see
and
it.
Then
yeah.
Look for the strangest-looking dog on the page.
Okay. Come on. I see you have one of is this your dog? Oh, this is Mac, but Santa.
Yeah, that's not cute. Him. That's the normal looking dog. He's the cute Hitler dog.
You want the weirdest looking dog?
Look for the you'll spot it right off.
Cute and Hitler. Not two words that normally get batted around.
Is this Philo? Yeah. Kind of a close up shot of Philo?
Yeah,
with
looking
a big dopey grin on his face.
Yeah, like he doesn't quite know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's brain like a pea.
Looks like my grandpa.
Yeah. So it's it's a strange time at our household. All right, there you go. That's the end. Wait, hold on. /pets. Okay, we're done. It is 503-505-6964. You want to join us today? You can also email. The text box is open, and you can also Skype if you like. It's Rick Emerson show. Rick Emerson show. There are other things I was going to be doing here, but now they've eluded me. I will say that today's program is brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, directly across the Baghdad Theater. If you have not been there, either of you, Sorrell's Vintages?
No, not yet.
No.
You're bringing shame on your families right now, on dead ancestors, on your descendants, on everyone.
I get that a lot.
It really is just one of the greatest places. I don't want to be bringing the alarm. It's like we're 15 days away from Christmas. Maybe you're looking for just the special Isaac Newton's birthday gift that says how much that person means to you. Your Kwanzaa gift. Maybe you've already got the Kwanzaa cake, and you've got the Kwanzaa carol, but the Kwanzaa gift not quite taken care of. So you're saying to me, my God, where will I go? The answer is you will go to Sorrell's Vintages. It is just a wonderful place, and I wouldn't say that if it wasn't so. Here's how confident I am in this. There's two sides of the store. Half is, of course, vintage stuff. It's American mid-century modern furniture, what they, Mad Men stuff, atomic age sort of furniture. Not reproductions, not duplicates. Stuff that they found at, other stores and estate sales all over the Northwest. They pick the best stuff. They bring it back, clean it, refurnish it. So it's not like some, store full of crap where you got to take it home, you got to clean it because it's just been all grunged up by sitting there, with like a bunch of McDonald's glasses from 1985.
Because Pete Campbell and Peggy Olson were doing it on the couch or whatever.
Or that, sure.
Right.
Sure. And it was a time before Scotch guarding. So,
yes.
They have to pick carefully. You could go into the store, though, into the vintage side. You could almost close your eyes and just pick something like at random. And it is going to look beautiful, and it's going to fit whatever you have in your home or your apartment. They had this thing. It was, I swear to God, it was like a dead on. It was exactly the same sort of a living room style bureau that my grandmother had. That I think she kept her hi-fi inside, and then like her down below it was like a lot of her Johnny Mathis records and whatnot. But then on top of it, it was like the great 1960s cocktail set, so great. And I made another. I got to come back and buy this. And it's like you go back and the stuff's gone half the time because again it's the one of a kind, and it is not nearly as expensive as it looks. You look at it, and you think, well, there's no way I can, but it's very very reasonable. Other side of the store is brand new stuff, a lot of stocking stuffer type items, more inexpensive things under $25, some things under $5, and it's great. And and I got to tell you this, here's a little promise from me to you, and there's nothing tacky in the place. That's the thing. You hear about stores like this sometimes, and they're just, you go in there just sort of gaudy and just kind of trashy, and there's nothing tacky to be found. I mean, it's like, I get the feeling that tackiness is like a
orange leather sofa.
Especially anybody uses like antique or vintage or whatever in their name, it's like, and again, it's like you go in there, it's just something like I got out of a Happy Meal 10 years ago that he is trying to foist onto you as though it's a valuable collector's item of some kind. You're not going to find that. I get the feeling that tackiness is sort of a mortal sin to Daniel, who runs the joint. So go to Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. You will not regret it, to you, my word on that. All right, without further ado, let's pause and take a breath. All right, hold on. And all right, ladies and gentlemen, at the news desk, let's find out what is happening in your
and
world.
Now, from the news desk. This is Don Taylor.
Filling in for Don Taylor, it is Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
The Portland cops bust a $3.1 million pot ring and arrest six dudes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Search warrants were served Tuesday and Wednesday at 13 homes. Police say grow operations were set up in a number of homes, in some cases electricity being directly siphoned from power lines to lights, transformers, and filtration systems. The illicit operation had no ties to medical marijuana, so it wasn't the okay kind, but it was the illegal kind.
The thing about this is, this is like the definition of misguided intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking about they're tapping into the electricity, like not on the wall, but like at the source.
Yeah.
I can't even do the thing of like plugging in the toaster and the space heater in the living room at the same time without every fuse in the house going.
We talked about this the other day. Smart criminals. They should get a pass. If you're clever, then all right.
Do some sort of a thing, like some NSA thing where you recruit them to use their powers for good.
Yes. Need you to grow pot for Uncle Sam.
Exactly.
one could argue they were using their powers for good, but yeah. Evidence seized by police include $74,000 in cash.
Wow.
Some 2,400 plants with an estimated street value of $2.5 million, and some 200 pounds of ready-to-deliver pot worth $600,000. And we did the math earlier. I wanted to know if they're saying 200 pounds of, like, ready-to-sell pot.
Let me just tell you, by the way, here's what doing the math looked like. And this is before we went on the air. This is like it maybe we had a little bit of a late start today, but it's like around 1:15 or so. And I'm putting together, you know, the songs and the cuts and the whatever. And we're kind of doing our thing. And then you have your iPad out over there, and you've got the calculator open. And I forget the number he used, but you're just – Eric, you just – says aloud to, like, to I guess to nobody but to Jim and I, presuming that we would know. He just says – what was the question you said?
I said, is $187 an ounce a good price for pot?
And that, you know, and then Jim immediately goes, oh, yeah, no, that's –
that's a great price.
That's really reasonable.
Price, yeah.
That's a bargoon.
And then like about 2 minutes later, then you followed up with the fact that like, oh, it's for a story where some guys got busted. And I thought it was like you were planning out the rest of your day.
I'm sorry.
Like it was a sort of like do show, get drop off dry cleaning, pot, then tea.
Go to a bowling alley to meet up with the dude.
I've got a coupon here. It's $187. Is that good? Should I use that?
See, it's it's expired.
No, that's what it comes down to. That's 200 pounds of ready-to-deliver pot. They're saying is worth $600,000, which comes out to $187.50 per ounce, actually.
Well, you know,
which
it's
is,
always...
Maybe they'd be selling it by the pound, so you get a discount.
Usually in mass, the price kind of goes down a little exponentially.
Right. But yeah, that's a lot of weed, is what
that's
that is.
That's a lot of weed.
Oh, that's plus more growing equipment valued at $200,000.
This is
a serious operation.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and you said they had $74,000 in cash. You're saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Have you ever? I mean, not that any of us here, advocate or endorse any kind of illegal behavior.
Sure.
That's wrong. We don't. You shouldn't do these things. But have you ever? Because as you just noted, we were talking about stupid criminals the other day. Have you ever just sat and had like some long reflective moment of the soul where you said, "Look, I'm smarter than the average guy," as we all, I think, you know we're a few cuts above the mean. You say, "Look, I'm fairly bright. I could probably sell drugs and maybe do it long enough, not get caught, maybe stash a little away, and then just resume my life."
Right.
You know, do the sort of weeds thing where you just sell it on, in whatever quantity, just a low level amount until you can just get like $50,000 in the bank, $100,000 in the bank,
sure.
and then you just call it a day. And then you kind of decide not to do that. You know, my wife and I, it's not like we seriously considered it, but we had this discussion about like at different times in our life, we were just dead broke. And you have that moment where you see a guy busted and he's just some gum chewer.
Some dirtbag.
Yeah. And he's got like $300,000 in his trunk. And you're going like, well, F that guy. Like, I'm way smarter than him. I could probably triple that and not get caught.
I've had those thoughts, especially knowing how much drugs sell for. I thought, well, you know, if I could undercut a little bit and buy it in bulk, go to, you know, Costco or whatever and get a lot of it and resell it. And I've thought that. But then the thing is, in these stories, like, they had $74,000 in cash lying around, but I'm guessing they weren't, like, driving nice cars or wearing nice – they're always dirt bags. Like, what, every marijuana salesman I've ever encountered has not seemed like a guy who has a lot of income.
Proprietor like, of
– like, what? Where's the money going? Like, what are you doing wrong that you're not making a killing at this business?
It goes towards pizza.
Well,
it goes towards – and actually, if you have enough cash – and you are a stoner, at one point in time, you want to build a fort out of money. I don't know why. I don't know what possesses you to want to do that. But, I mean, this cash comes in kind of brick form, and it would just stand to reason. You can make yourself a nice little tower.
Well, I think it might be nature's way of distributing favors. You know, that you get some sort of like, you get the intestinal fortitude to have a little bit of a criminal bent. You get maybe the motivation and the drive to start building your drug-based empire. But then, and the analogy that I always use for things like this is it's like that little space at the top of your sink that keeps it from overflowing. Nature just builds in a sort of control system, like a release. And the release is that you're just not that smart.
Right.
See also rock stars. You know, this is the guy who makes, and I'm not thinking of anybody in particular who might reside here in Portland, but who sells, you know, like 50 million records or something, and then it's like he's got $6 million he owes to the IRS. And it's like, dude, look, here's the thing. I mean, I am like one shade away from being homeless, like all the time, there but for the grace of my wife. And I have somebody who does my taxes for me. I have somebody who does all that because I don't trust my math ever. This is just a pot story for the news on some ridiculous talk show. And you were having two of us check your math on whether it was a good price for weed.
Yeah.
Art Alexakis, hire an accountant, for the love of Christ. Anyway, so that's the thing. Yeah, you just see these dirt bags, and you go like, well, why?
I will get you an extension.
Sorry.
Don't you think they ought to? Shouldn't, like, H&R Block totally be doing the here is the money that I owe you?
Here's the money that I owe you.
Just totally just recruit him like they did with Hammer. And it's just like him with a big bag of money with a dollar sign in the front of it and just like sadly handing it over and then shuffling out the door on his way to, you know, go put on a paper hat at a fast food restaurant somewhere.
Yeah.
It's all set with love, Art. Here's Mr. Eric Snyder.
The Senate is beginning their debate. Senate is beginning its debate on the tax cut bill. Debate began Thursday night on an $858 billion tax bill that would settle the long-debated issue of whether to extend the Bush tax cuts. The bill, which will come up for a test vote on Monday, will probably pass the Senate with the support of many Democrats. In the House, however, it's a different matter.
A test vote?
I don't know what that means.
That's interesting. I wonder, is that where they do like a vote within the party or a vote within – I'm not really sure how that works.
I don't know. That seems like –
interesting.
Seems like a thing I should have looked up before I read the story. Now that
it's fine. Just say it with authority.
They're going to do a test vote, Rick.
That's right.
Come on.
It's all a test vote. Yeah, that's what's required here.
And the House is a different matter. Many House Democrats have rejected the compromise, chanting, just say no, in a closed-door powwow.
Because we know how well that worked out last time.
Clever liberals.
closed-door powwow before passing a non-binding resolution declaring their opposition to the agreement as it stands.
That is like the Democratic Party in a nutshell, by the way. That is a microcosm. You want to know why they can't ever win anything? And when they do win anything, they can never hold on to it? It's because they take up their time passing non-binding resolutions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a non-binding resolution is just... in the name, right? They're sort of just giving away that, like, well, this doesn't really mean anything, and
right.
it has no power, and it's toothless, and also we're effective and emasculated in every way.
But we're taking a stand on this issue, but we need to be able to change our minds.
Right?
Later.
You know, it's like
don't hold us to it.
It's like sort of a it's like when you're downloading like the freeware version of something, you know, and it's like it says, okay, now you can convert to two video files with this, but they're going to be watermarked, and also you can't save them anywhere. But you're just too cheap to pay the $3.99.
The House Democrats are particularly angry because President Obama bypassed them and went straight for Republicans to hammer out the deal. So they were like, hey, Obama, what about this? And Obama's like, whatever, I'm going to talk to the Republicans. And they're like, oh, do you see that? You totally just went and talked to the Republicans.
Get all non-binding on your ass right now.
So the Democrats are totally pissed now.
And you would feel like the thing is, you look at Nancy Pelosi, and she just seems like such a horrible person, and just seems so unbelievably mean that you figure at least she, would have the stones to sort of just, you know, to lay it out there like Clinton style.
Apparently, even the meanest Democrat. Spineless.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you got to give it up to Republicans. It's like, you know, evil though they may be. I mean, they're efficient with it. I mean, you know, they're really – I mean, they can really get things done with that evil.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Everyone's mad about it.
Democrats just spend all their time perfecting the petulant sort of, the hurt look, you know? This sort of awkward glance across the room where they try to imply their displeasure with something you have done as opposed to actually changing it in any way. Here's Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
You'll probably want to know about that two-year-old that got trapped inside the claw machine at
the
mall.
More than anything on earth. You have no idea, seriously.
I had to disappoint you earlier with the news that this child is not dead.
No, the child
survived.
Now let's just point out that was said for satiric purposes right now. Rick Emerson's not rooting for the death of children. That's
speaking of hangdog looks,
I had erroneously pointed out this could be a Darwin story, but Rick pointed out that it's not a Darwin unless the victim dies.
Okay, now that's true. Now, I was disappointed we didn't have a Darwin watch in the abstract.
Okay. All right.
You know, in a sort of generalized sense.
You don't wish for the death of this specific two-year-old.
I do not. Okay. I wish for Darwin watches in an overarching, vague kind of way.
Sure.
Just as regards humanity as a whole.
If it had been a 20-year-old who got stuck in the claw machine and then suffocated and died.
Fine.
That would be hilarious.
And hilarious. Yeah. I mean, yeah, really, I give that three thumbs up. So
this happened in Robinson Township, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, PA.
Represent. It's at the mall at Robinson on Wednesday night. It happened in the evening. Mother little girl said in the police report she looked away for a moment. It's always just for a moment. Looked away for a moment. Next thing she knew, the girl was inside the claw machine standing up.
It seems like we may be missing some frames from this picture.
Yeah.
The toddler had like a Leatherman in her pocket, and as soon as her mom turned her corner, she's like, dink, dink, I'm in.
And she's only in there for maybe a half hour, and the child was safely removed, wasn't hurt. She seemed to be having a good time inside the toy machine. She wasn't scared or crying, just... She's in there in a big pile of toys. Who wouldn't be having a good time?
You can't even get your hand in that thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, have you seen some of like the gargantuan ones that they have now, where like they're like full size teddy bears in there, and so like the little like the drop box is massive. You could fit it.
You could fit a 2 year old.
You could fit at least two. I mean, I'd say a good solid two toddlers in that box.
I sense an ad hoc Portland version of Mythbusters coming up.
Bring us your children.
And this is very cute. The child never cried, seemed to be enjoying herself, and the mom says, or no, the police say, we're ready to leave, and the mom took the binky out of the kid's mouth and said she had something to say, and she said, thank you.
Aww.
Isn't that cute?
Aww. I don't even care if it's made up. It's adorable. Okay, hold on. I got like five questions.
And the machine she climbed into has since been replaced by one with a smaller opening.
All right, hold on a second. Let's see.
Does that reduce the number of questions you have?
No, actually. Okay. Let's see. Okay, I got like, we'll start from the back here.
Okay.
Bink. Bink or binky?
It says bink here.
I thought a binky was a blanket. Is a binky anything the child is fixated on at that moment?
I grew up with a binky being a blanket, but I've heard people, maybe it's an East Coast thing, of bink or binky being the pacifier.
Like a pacifier.
Yeah, that's what I kind of know it as, is the pacifier.
And so you were from the East Coast as well?
No, I'm from the West Coast, and I grew up thinking that was a blanket.
Okay, yeah, so that's my, and that, also a whoobie. We would also accept whoobie.
Whoobie,
there.
Sure.
You're East Coast, Jim. Bink?
Bink is pacifier. Whoopi was traditionally blanket.
That's the Mr. Mom thing, right?
Yes.
There. Did that originate with Mr. Mom?
I think so. Yeah, the Whoopi, because they had to set it in the fireplace.
It's interesting how these things leach into the popular culture.
I wonder if that was something they did make it up for that.
Okay, that's going to be a pop culture authority for next week. All right. Let's see. Next week's pop culture authority. Did Whoopi come from Mr. Mom? Mr. Mom. All right. Because it's either that or I got to answer this guy's question about. In Another One Bites the Dust, does Freddie Mercury actually say, I'm not adopted?
I'm not adopted!
See, that's what I'm saying. And it's like, you know, and then I'm just like the When a Man Loves a Walnut guy, you know? So, okay, so that was my first question. Second question. No. Third question. Crawling up inside the machine. And again, it's not like I try this all the time just because I'm of a mind to do larceny, but because it fascinates me. You just can't. It's not even the size of the opening. You put your hand in there, and it's like as the door opens, as the door swings upward, it then also simultaneously blocks the entrance. So you can't do that.
So you can't reach up and just grab a prize.
Right. So it's like the kid, it doesn't seem like the kid was able to, and there's no way the kid could possibly be smaller than the door clears the kid on the way back down and closes, thus opening it.
Baby Sandman or something.
Must be a way, once you crawl into the deposit space where the prizes drop down into, once you're in there, you could maybe then climb up through the opening.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to reach your arm that way, but if you were actually in there.
But if you're in the place where you receive the prize, the deposit space,
mm-hmm.
if you're in there, the door still has to swing shut, and it seems like you're going to be blocking the door from closing, is my thing. The logistics of this make no sense to me. Now, the kid clearly got inside.
Apparently it really did happen, yeah.
So
it wasn't a magic trick.
I was just going to say, we ruled out the fact that the kid is, in fact, just a demon of some kind. or perhaps the Great Hardeen. It's a little Boardwalk Empire joke for you who are not Eric or Jim, who don't watch Boardwalk Empire.
Sorry.
It's okay. I've had this whole... I'm a little OCD, which I know will surprise everybody. And the list of things, you know, that we do on the shows every week, you know, we do like recaps of Walking Dead and Dexter. And every single day, I've had this like I do with the Franklin Covey people would call planning forward. Every single day, I have planned forward my talk about now Sundays 5 days ago. Talk about Boardwalk Empire. Talk about Dexter. And every single day, it's like the combination of people in the room is such that, like, no one, it's just me. So I'm just going to have to be zen with the fact that I won't be able to do that.
Sorry.
This week. That's okay. Final thought. You were talking about Jim, that said the thing about these redemption machines. They got the ones that are so big you can put, like, a full-on teddy bear inside now.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking like a Lloyd's Center redemption machine? Because that's really
there's a Fred Meyer right by my house that has the gargantuan-sized prizes inside. And... Like you were saying, Snyder, D. Snyder. I want to keep wanting to call you D. Snyder so badly.
I never even put that together.
Oh, really?
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, I get that a lot.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dude. But no, the receptacle underneath, because the prizes are so big, the door is slightly larger than your average contraption. But with this one, the door is smaller so that you can actually retrieve the prize because it is so much larger. Mm-hmm. If the door was normal size, you wouldn't be able to pull it out. You'd have to like sort of like wrench it out and end up tearing it at some point.
All right. Well, clearly, there's got to be some sort of a. We're
going to need one of these machines. We're going to need at least a good half dozen to a baker's dozen of toddlers of varying sizes and weights and ethnicities.
We either need like two 2-year-olds or one 4-year-old. whatever we can get.
I was actually going to say that if you know, if maybe you've got twins, that's better. So if something does happen to go wrong, you know, then it's not a total.
You still got one.
It's not a total loss.
I mean,
you know, it's a bit of it's almost a wash, really, in that regard.
You lost Zaymont, but you still got Tomax.
Look at you.
Thank you.
Look at you, playa. all right. This is all true. My final observation about this, and that statement is really never accurate, but in this, I will just have to hold myself to this one final thing. If you go to Lloyd Center, that place is, they must do some sort of focus grouping where they try to figure out, like, where is the demographic most likely to put, like, the rent money into a redemption machine in the hopes of getting some sort of, like, you know, some sort of shiny tchotchke? And the answer is Lloyd Center. Mm. And really, the answer to, like, any question that involves people giving money they probably shouldn't be spending to a guy who probably doesn't deserve it to get something that's not worth it and that, like, sparkles or that has, like, a dollar sign on it somewhere or that maybe can be put on your teeth, that's Lloyd Center. But the arcade... You're a movie critic, so you've gone to the theater, not across the street, but
the one
inside,
in the mall.
Like in Dante's Ninth Circle.
Terrible. And you have to, because you have to pass through the food court, and everyone always offering you, it's like walking through the red light district of Bangkok. People want you to take samples. You want chicken? You want chicken?
It's
like running the gauntlet. It's terrible.
It is just like a living, breathing hell on earth.
Yeah.
It is like all the worst parts of humanity concentrated and distilled into one area. But there's that arcade right by the movie theater, and it's like, you know, and my wife and I, you know, we're big dorks, so, you know, we play video games every now and again. We used to fixate on this game when we lived in San Diego. There was this game called Sega Top Skate. It was a fantastic arcade game. Really, the last arcade game that I think I was really addicted to, and this is a long time ago, but it was... You know, it was a game where there was like a full on like skateboard mounted to the front of the game and like
a safety
railing so you wouldn't fall off, and it was like a virtual skating game, and it was really fantastic.
Cool.
It was awesome, and we spent you know, days and days of our lives probably playing that game, all told, when we lived in San Diego. So we see that game at that arcade at Lloyd Center, you know, like maybe a year and a half ago. We're like, oh my god, it's Sega Top Skater. Do you remember? We haven't played this game forever. So we go in. And it was like, you know, and it was fun. It was great. But it's like that arcade is so loud. I mean, I think I got like tinnitus just by like just a couple hours, you know, or the hour or whatever that I was in there with my wife, just sort of playing the game, wandering around. And it's like and on the way out, I asked the guy who was working there with just this sad, broken look, just eyes like burned out flashbulbs behind the counter. And I just said, like, I said, when you leave here, Do you just want to go home and just sit in a quiet, dark room away? And I haven't even gotten to the end of the sentence, and he just nodded his head, and he said, yes. Yes, I do.
And polish my gun.
And I just, you know, and just wait for the angel of death and the sweet hand of release. And I just, and I couldn't even continue the conversation. It was so depressing, I just had to leave. But that place is full of redemption games. And one of the redemption games they've got there, I swear to God, this is how you know you can never win, is that, like, the top prize is, like, an Xbox 360.
Right.
It's like a huge crane arm, like the size of a house.
For sure, for a dollar, you're going to get that.
Yeah, and it's like it's 50 cents a play.
Yeah.
And you just see the family, always with like nine kids, standing there, and it's like, Daddy gonna win you a prize. You know, and it's just, you just go, no, Daddy going to go home and drink himself to sleep tonight in wrapped in a warm blanket of shame and regret. That's what he's going to do. So I'm just saying. All right, you were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Let's take a break here. I'm just do one more, and we'll take a break. Then we'll come back on the other side. Lots to get through today, including Humor Meet Comedy 101 with Jim Willig and more news with Eric Snyder. Let's do one more here.
Let's do the baby names.
Awesome.
At long last.
I believe this is like the fifth time we've attempted to do the story this week.
I've personally looked at this piece of paper three times this week. I know I have.
It's become a quest for us. That's the thing.
It may be outdated now, but this is the top 10 list of baby names for 2010. From Baby Center.
It's still 2010.
Okay, all right. The top name for girls this year is Sophia. The number one boy name is Aiden. And while pop culture holds a strong influence, this editor-in-chief, Linda Murray, says not all parents are naming their kids based on that.
Some parents are influenced by the Bible or, you know, family traditions and things like that.
Well, you know, I am a big fan, if they're done correctly, of biblical names.
Sure.
Biblical, there's nothing that sounds more righteous than a biblical, no pun intended, than a biblical name if you really, you know, like Zechariah or something.
Yeah.
You know, or...
Jeremiah. Not Jeremy, but Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, that's a good name. But then, of course, you're subjecting the kid to a whole Joy to the World, you know, Three Dog Night, hell.
That will probably fade over time.
You would, yeah. I mean, as an adult, though, you'll probably come back and re-embrace that. Well, so you were from Utah. Are you
I grew up in Southern California. I lived in Utah for a while. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, so my wife is from Provo, and I'm right. from, you know, and I'm not, but I came from, you know, I had a Catholic family, and so there was a lot of, and a Catholic family, they were very, like, into, like, you know, my dad especially, like, man, that was like, all the, like, Mr., like, you know, cultural heritage and whatever, so they like names from, you know, from back when, and so it was a lot of, like Richard and James and Robert and, right. you know, and very, you know, and but there's something really sturdy about those names. There's something yeah. you feel like they're, mm-hmm. you know, like they're, it's like a piece of fine walnut furniture. Like it's not gonna be out of style, not gonna fall apart. It's gonna be there, it's gonna be reliable. And the thing, and it's not gonna, and also, it's not gonna be some tell for like what decade you were born in or right. what your parents were.
Right.
You know, like naming your kid Skyler, you know, or something, which is just, you know, it's just like one of the most loathsome crimes, mm-hmm. You know, against any child, you know, or. Here's the thing. I don't ever again need to meet a kid named Cody. Ever, 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 ever. Quit naming your children Cody for the love of Christ Almighty. I don't know why it bugs me so much, but it just does.
Hey, and you know the thing about Cody? I don't know anyone named Cody over the age of 20.
No.
Like,
no.
What happens? Do you change your name when you become an adult? Because I don't know any adult Codys.
There's a crystal that's implanted in your hand when you're named Cody, and then when you get to be about 19 or so, it starts to blink. And then you got to go.
Well right. done. It's like you can't really picture having. I mean, I know that we
Cody's
had a president.
Run, sorry.
We had a President Tyler at one point, so I'll give a pass. But you can't have it like President Cody.
Yeah.
You know, President Cody Lamont had this to say. You know, and it's like you just picture him like sort of running a train set behind the you know behind the desk at the Oval Office and sort of looking up with a goofy goggle-eyed look on his face.
Like turtles.
Yeah, thatchy blonde hair.
Do you want to hear the hot names for boys?
Oh, more than anything,
because she has them.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just is that the lead? All right, here
yeah,
we go.
Maria.
Her number one name is Aiden for this year. Jacob, Jackson, Ethan, Jaden, Noah, Logan, Caden,
Logan,
Lucas, and Liam.
Wait, there's like at least three ins in there. There's like Aiden, there's Jaden, and then there's mm-hmm. like Caden.
There was one in there. Yeah, Caden and Jaden. I'm not with that.
Yes, see, those are such a bot.
I don't like those names.
Yeah, the shelf life on those is going to be finite, I think.
Logan's one. I have a nephew named Logan. He's three.
We got lots of listeners named Logan. We are awash in Logans mm-hmm. in this audience. Logan, David, and Brian, we get a ton of for some reason of the audience. It must be a generational thing.
One of those was Noah. I like that.
Noah's a great name. I know a couple guys named Noah. Great name. You know, and I guess maybe you get a little ribbing there, but who cares? I mean, that's like the cool kind of ribbing.
Well, yeah,
you know?
I mean, because that name has been around, you know, literally for 6,000 years.
Yeah.
So it's time tested.
That's the thing is, yeah, it's like it's a generation upon generation. Yes. They've looked at it and they said it still works. Let me just listen to that one more time.
The number one name is Aiden.
I like that actually.
Jacob, Jackson, Ethan, Jaden, Noah, Logan, Caden, Lucas, and Liam.
What do we think about Jackson?
I like, in general, the idea of last names as first names, but Jackson has been done a lot.
I know a lot of Jacksons.
Yeah.
Several. I mean, maybe not tons, but I mean more than you'd think you would. I know, like three.
It's lost its coolness.
Yeah.
But in general, I knew a guy in college named Hamilton.
That's a great name.
Yeah, that's a great first name.
That's a very solid name.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Hamilton.
That's a fantastic
like that.
First name.
He's sitting on like a plantation somewhere, yeah. just like, you know, sipping a mint julep. Like, yeah, it's Hamilton. How's it going?
Yeah, I mean, that it's a name that it connotes a certain degree it's a dignified name.
Yeah.
Have you guys read, I talk about this book just it's so much, I ought to get like some sort of kickback for this. Have you guys read the book Freakonomics?
Yes.
Freakonomics is fantastic. Jimmy, if you ever read this, you ought to read it. They do a whole thing about the science of names and how names move from one area of society to another. And essentially, the upshot is that names originate with upper class, which is higher income, higher education level families. Then they migrate down through middle class. Lower middle class, then to lower class. So, like, and the names that you might traditionally think of as trashy, like your Brittany, your Tiffany,
your Amber,
and, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They all start as upper class names. People in lower economic stratas, they look and they say, "Aha!" And they associate the name with wealth, power, success, and they name their kids that, thinking that it has some talismanic power. And so, what happens is, 20 years later, you got a bunch of trashy kids running around.
It taints the name.
Yeah,
and they dirty it up.
Yeah, and they're all named Christy with an I.
It is a talisman of some sort because it's like future strippers of America names. Well, if you're naming your kid that, you might as well get him a pair.
But there was a time. But there was a time when all your Ambers and Tiffanys and Britneys were your upper class rich white girls.
And it does seem to only work the one way. Like it only has the negative effects. Like it never naming your kid. You know, naming your kid like like I'm failing on the biblical name front. That's my instant karma right
Noah.
There.
Noah,
sure. I was trying to come up with one that I hadn't come up with yet. I was going to say Leviticus.
Jacob,
and that's
Isaiah.
Just wrong. Isaiah. There you go. That, you know, name your kid Isaiah. Not going to make him a Supreme Court justice.
No.
But yeah, you name your daughter Nicole. There's a price tag in her future.
The one name that still to this day just drops my jaw, Colin Powell. Colin.
Yeah.
Why not
Colin?
Yeah. Really?
There's some weird misspellings and mispronunciations that linger out there in the world, too. Apparently, in the last 10 or 12 years, and you can read into this what you want about society and our general education level, but apparently there are now – it's not equal, but there's like – for kids named Michael, the inversion of the A and the E is now like 30% of the kids that are named Michael, where they actually swap the A and the E. And I don't think it's because they're trying to be like rakish or sort of, you know, edgy. It's like they just don't quite know.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just tell you this? This is how we'll end this and we'll take a break. We'll do a break here. Come back on the other side. Boy, this show is zipping by, which is, by the way, that's the indicator. Pure gold.
Yeah.
We're here with Mr. Big Jim Willig. We'll do comedy, Humor Meet Comedy 101, talking about Ms. Carol Burnett. Eric D. Snyder is here. By the way, you can find out more about Jim Willig at facebook.com/Jim Willig, W-I-L-L-I-G. And Eric D. Snyder can be found at ericdsnyder.com. Also, film.com, Cinematical, and the movie show with Baron Snyder, Fridays, 11 a.m. At Cascadia.fm. Is that archived? Is that a thing they can can be downloading that later on?
Yeah, it's
on
the iTunes as well.
Yep. Excellent.
Movie BS with Baron Snyder.
My one final note about all of this is that my wife is she works in the medical profession. She's a nurse, and so she has a lot of like nurse friends who works in different areas, and so she gets to hear they all swap horror stories about like, well, what do you work with? Well, I work with I work with crazy people. What about you? Well, I work with I work in a burn unit. What about you? And so it's like everybody's got their own sort of stripe of story to tell. But she has a friend who works in the the OBGYN unit, or the delivery unit, whatever it is, maybe it's obstetrics, where they're delivering the babies. And she said that and she works sometimes with people who the economically challenged and disadvantaged members of our society.
Sure.
Many of whom also have a fondness for chemical intoxication. And she said that there's an astonishing number of mothers who named their daughters Crystal.
Oh, God.
She said that she said that on the one hand, you would be staggered and yet not at all staggered mm-hmm. by the number of moms who roll into hospitals in certain areas of Portland. And then as soon as the kid comes out, it's like they don't even have to think about it. They're just like, I'm going to give her the most beautiful, name her with the most beautiful word on earth, Crystal.
I'm going to name you after what I'm going to sell you for.
And then, immediately followed up by, like, when can I be discharged?
Yeah.
So, good times for everyone.
Mama's got ants on her skin.
We'll go out on that. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay right there. We'll return on the other side of this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Well, this is that awkward time when I try to segue smoothly from the crystal meth reference to one of our many fine business partners. Who will it be today, you might ask? Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com, or you can call them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. And as our good friend Michael Mara was saying on his program the other day, as we get toward the end of the year, you know, we talk a little bit more business than we might otherwise, because it's, not to be maudlin, I'll say full-on maudlin mode as we get to Christmas. We're going to be here on Christmas Eve. And that is when I will launch my, my shameless sentimentality app. For now, I will just give you the preview by saying that, we've been here since June. So what is that? July, August, September, October, November, December. So we're at 6 months, 7 months, I guess. No, wait. I am not that bright. Six. I need your calculator again, Eric. We've been 6 months, and, we have launched into this version of the show, and, not to be too Horatio Alger about it, but, I mean, we're doing our own thing, and it's an independently owned show. We've kind of brought the show in under our own roof, under our own umbrella. And, we wouldn't be able to do that if it weren't for two groups of people. And that is, of course, you fine folks, who give up your 32 cents a day. And you feel like that is... And I joked early on, when the show was getting ready to launch, when I talked to, I think, Will Lammetweek or somebody was asking me about this, and I said that said that, you know, we're asking people, you know, to give up, you know, 32 cents a day for the amusement of this program, and, you know, we'll see whether or not they think they were worth it. And you know, sort of a half joke, but everybody has sort of kind of taken a vote, and you've decided that it is worth the 32 cents a day. And as silly as it sounds, that really it means a great deal that you continue to do that, because I mean, that's, you know, your $7 a month could be going somewhere else, and it means a lot that you have you've chosen to to help support us, because that's the only way that we're able to do the show. And the other half of that equation is our business partners, and one of them is Squires Electric, and one of the first businesses that came on board with us. 503-252-1609 is where you can find out more about them. 503-252-1609, or SquiresElectric.com. It has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business. They can make your life easier. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, wiring of any kind, if you're going to be expanding your business into a second building, or maybe you're going to be remodeling your home, maybe you're in a home that was built, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, a lot of those, especially in like the John's Landing area, certain parts of like Northeast Portland, my house, for example, I think is 80 years old, and you want to make sure that the wiring is just up to snuff, so you're not going to have any difficulties getting through the winter, and that if you are going to be running a lot of those modern conveniences, that it's just not going to blow all the fuses, you know, the first time you try to run the ice box or something. So you can talk to Squires Electric, and they're going to get it taken care of for you. SquiresElectric.com is their website, and 503-252-1609, that's their number. And just to wrap all this up, I will say that I started this whole discussion by talking about the two groups of people, the listeners and our business partners. But really, they are almost exclusively one and the same. I mean, almost without exception, because it is, it's a small family, but a freakishly devoted and loyal family. And Joe Squires, who owns Squires Electric, he's been a listener since 1998. I mean, he's been listening for almost 13 years now. And so he has put the support of his business behind us. And so we thank him. And when it comes to your electrical needs, we ask you to think of those guys. 503-252-1609. That is Squires Electric, or Squires Electric. com. The Rick Emerson Show continues next with more from Mr. Jim Willig, Mr. Eric D. Snyder, and y'all stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Sing, wise of angels, sing.
clown noise. I didn't hear any clown noise there. You're insane. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. A little Twisted Sister. That... Were you just beatboxing?
No, I wouldn't do nothing.
Okay, just checking. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program on this Friday, December 10th. 2010, we're here with Mr. Eric D. Snyder, filling in for Dawn Taylor, from whom we may or may not hear later. We had her on the phone, and then it was at that moment that the doctor sort of summoned her back. I guess we should say, I'm unclear how to proceed about this, but we'll say that, they started ruling out things.
Right.
In terms of Patrick and what is, you know, what may or may not be up with him. So they ruled out some of the more serious things, but, you know, somebody just sent me a message and said, have they figured out exactly what it is that's causing everything to go wonky? And the answer is no. You know, that may change by the next time we talk to Dawn, but as of now, you know, they've taken some of the more dread things off the table, but it's a little bit of a puzzle still.
Dawn told me last night that their current theory is that he has an ancient Indian shaman growing inside his body, as in the popular film The Manitou. So that's the current theory they're working under.
What is the cure for that? Just fire, or
as I recall, I can't remember how Tony Curtis was involved somehow in curing it. I remember that.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's probably gettable now.
Well, that's true.
I don't really know that he's going to resist
not
much
as busy
at all.
Anymore.
Yeah. Coming up later on this hour, we'll have headlines including what, Mr. Eric D. Snyder?
Well, a school district in California has banned a clothing line with supposed Nazi imagery, which seems like a good idea. A St. Louis man accidentally shoots himself after spotting burglars, and the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony went on despite the winner not being there.
Okay, then. also, Mr. Big Jim Willig will have another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about Ms. Carol Burnett. So that is all on the way. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. A little bit of business here to remind you that coming up Monday, I will actually not be here. Monday. And this is something that was sort of planned, so it is either the best or the worst timing possible, depending on how you look at it. I'm going to be gone on Friday, or on Monday, rather, the 13th. I will be en route back to Portland from lovely Provo, so I will be in the air at that time. I'm going to get back too late, probably, to do the show, and may or may not, depending on how everything goes Monday, with the situation with Dawn and Patrick, I may be able to. There may be somebody here I might actually call in. And I talked about maybe calling in from the actual groping happening at the, you know, like as my junk was being felt by the TSA guy. But have you, I don't know if you've gone, if you've seen this, but I posted something on Twitter last night. Cheryl sent this to me. I put it on Twitter and on Facebook. I don't remember what they're called. They're called like morph suits or suit morphs. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The most amazing thing. I believe if you go to my Facebook page, you can go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. The only way I can describe it is it's like an all over suit like Spider-Man wears. It is like the all over Lycra bodysuit. It covers every inch of your body. You can see out of it. And then it's got a series of exciting designs. One of them is just like, there's like the American flag design. One of them is just like polka dots. One is like a skeleton. But it is a one-piece Lycra bodysuit. And it just covers you entirely. Apparently, it's very comfortable, very breathable, very stretchy. And I guess sort of a strangely freeing sensation to walk around inside of it. I say this only for this purpose. I want to point out that if I had known about these things like a week ago, I would have bought one. And that's what I would have worn through security. And it really doesn't do justice to it just to describe it. So when you get a chance, go look that up. It's a thing that is amusing. So I will be flying back from Utah on Monday, so I will not be here. But back to everything normal on Tuesday, without further ado. We will get to Mr. Eric D. Snyder. You are in addition to helping us out here by filling in for Dawn Taylor, and which you have done several times this week, and we thank you for that. You also host Movie BS with Baron Snyder over at Cascadia.fm.
Yes, indeed.
And you also write for Film.com and Cinematical.com. Mm-hmm. And basically, you're everywhere. You're omnipresent. You are the wind.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
I have no clever segue into this, so I'll just say, what's going to be at the Cineplex this weekend, Eric Snyder? What might I want of you?
Well, the big new releases, neither are really worth seeing. That's the new Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, which is okay, but eh. And this is the third one of those, and there's like 17 books.
Yeah, you got four more in that, and then probably, you know, and then they're going to do what they do with Tolkien, where they just look around C.S. Lewis's study for scraps of paper that they can make into, you know, can we get this made into a treatment at least?
And that thing's fine. The other one is The Tourist with Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp, two of the biggest movie stars in the world.
Is this the thing that she's getting all the crap for? from people in Bosnia or something?
No, that's something she's about to make.
Okay.
So Depp and Jolie have never been in a movie together before, and it sounds perfect. They're two of the biggest movie stars in the world, and the movie's just boring and poo.
What is it about?
Oh, it's like sort of a Hitchcocky wrong man kind of mistaken identity thing in Europe. Her boyfriend is a master thief, and so the cops are following her, hoping she will lead them to him because they don't know what he looks like.
Right.
And Johnny Depp is an ordinary American tourist, and she lets the cops think that he is the boyfriend.
I see.
The problem is Johnny Depp not really good at playing an average ordinary guy. Like, he's supposed to be this average schlub from Wisconsin, and that's like the one thing Johnny Depp can't do.
I have seen him try to play the sort of common man, you know, just the regular Joe a few different times. Nick of Time, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Nick of Time? Is that the movie I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
And it's like that was just an abject failure.
It's just, yeah.
Every time he tries, it's basically every time he tries to pretend that he is not like the hottest, most talented guy on earth, basically. I mean, because you can't wash that pretty off. There's no covering up.
He actually looks terrible, actually. They did a good job of making him not look glamorous, but he's still quirky and odd.
Even a frumpy, homely Johnny Depp is still a Johnny effing Depp.
Well,
you
true.
Know? Even,
true.
You know, it was Detective Doug Henson from 21 Jump Street.
I mean,
you know, you still can't quite, like, there's no way that somebody this pretty is a cop.
The central premise of The Tourist is that Angelina Jolie is super hot. Because everything's all about looking at her, and all the people around her look at her. And like, I picture them going to the Hollywood boardroom being, all right, here's the pitch.
Right.
How about that Angelina Jolie, huh?
Yeah.
One hot number, huh?
Hey, do we all like lips and boobs? Yes.
Yeah. We are. Right.
Auga, auga.
Green light.
Cartoon wolves.
The thing about Angelina Jolie is I vacillate back and forth on her about whether I think that she's not an unattractive woman.
No.
I will say that. Sometimes I think that she's just flat out weird looking, but then it's like, but then there's a third mood sometimes where I think that she's weird looking, but that's where the hotness comes from, you know. And the thing I will say about her is whether or not she's one of those people that I think it's like it doesn't matter, almost doesn't matter what she looks like because she's just sexy in some intangible way.
Yeah,
there's some like vibe there.
She's sexy and she's confident about her sexiness. She's not one of these women that are yes, I'm pretty, but I don't want to put too much stock in that because I don't want to seem like that. No, she knows she's got
the
goods.
She owns it.
She doesn't flaunt it openly. She can play either end of the spectrum. She can just sort of like be like a regular gal, but at the same time, she just is incredible to look at.
Don't you get the sense too that when I don't know how old she is now. But when Angelina Jolie is like 65, she's still going to be gorgeous.
Well, you mean like Sophia Loren kind of hot. Yeah.
I mean, legitimately beautiful, although, probably still at that
have
age.
Have you seen Sophia Loren lately, though?
I would still.
She looks like Jeff Goldblum now. And she really does.
I would show her my chaos theory. Let's put it that way.
The thing about Sophia Loren is that here's my deal with that, is that Sophia Loren, at some point in the last 10 years, like, we all took a vote and we decided that she was going to be the go-to old hot chick that you would still do.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we've checked up on that recently.
Yeah, honestly, she was at the Oscars last year, the year before, and that's where I noticed that she's morphed into Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, that's maybe a follow-up study.
We may need to. Helen Mirren is still legitimately very attractive.
I'm saying for me, Barbara Eden. Barbara Eden, I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I can't
I saw her
now.
At the. I saw her at a roast last year for. I don't remember who it was. It was like Gilbert Gottfried or somebody. But there's a roast makup on and maybe a little work or whatever. But I like to think that is, you know, that is a guy that I have the finely trained eye. I can spot what it's – here's the thing is like – because everybody's had this experience where it's sort of the you know, it's a little bit of a go to bed with one person and then wake up and then it, like, you see him in a good light the next day.
Yeah.
And it's like a whole different story. And every guy's had that experience where it's like, you know, like the girl you meet at the bar, not the girl that you see, like, you know, standing in your bedroom the next morning, and you go, oh, I've chosen so poorly. How can I?
I've been a bad choice.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Last call pretty is never pretty in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and it's, you know, and that's the as Tom Likers would say, that's why her house is always the place to go, because you can't slink her out of your home. But I think Barbara Eden is probably still legitimately pretty. But here's the thing. But I've also started to come around. I think, like, it's almost not even Barbara Eden for me anymore. You know who is still, in my opinion, just flat out, I mean, just cute and sexy. That's the thing, because there's cute, beautiful, hot, pretty, sexy, handsome, some women are. Not all the same thing. Sometimes they overlap. You get more than one. Sometimes you just get one. You know who is cute and sexy? Dawn Wells from Gilligan's Island. Still.
Really?
Still sexy, cute. I mean, you can tell that she's not a young woman anymore. You can tell that she's up there.
Right.
But still, I think, legitimately attractive and legitimately cute. And maybe that's because I view her through the whole prism of the show and the everything. But I mean, I don't think so. I think she's still, I think she's led a clean life.
Good for her.
Just spend all her time just sitting around just getting wasted with Bob Denver, apparently, on the... Hey, Bob Denver, dead?
I want to say he died a couple of years ago. That sounds...
See?
If only there were some way of finding out.
No, but see, that's cheating.
Series of tubes, yeah. Maybe.
No, that's we've ruled that out on this program. That's, you can't, that's, mm. That's just a...
I could swear I remember his death. But I...
How sad for him if that's not true. Like, if he's listening out there somewhere going, I know right here.
I know I've fantasized about Bob Denver's death.
Standing over him, hands around his throat.
I danced on somebody's grave.
Name Denver. Maybe it was John.
Okay, let me throw one more out. This is the last time I'll do this, because otherwise it's just going to turn a whole day of, like, dead or alive. Dom DeLuise.
Dead.
Dead.
Are you sure?
He died, like, a year ago.
Are you positive?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Final answer.
I'm not even gonna look. I'll just assume that you were right about that.
I am certain that Dom DeLuise is dead.
See, I would have sworn if it were like if I had to lay money, like if I was in a sports book or something right now, I would have laid money. See, you're a writer, so now I'm also conscious. Laid.
You would have laid money.
I would have laid money that Dom DeLuise fell into the category of thought he was dead, still alive. You know. Like, I didn't think he was around, you know, but he was still clinging on somewhere. But you're saying dead, so.
Last time I saw Dom anywhere was on the I Love the Insert Decade Here.
Really?
He had like a little minor, like, you know, Dom DeLuise's funny
talking
pop
about
culture
his role
reference.
In Fatso.
Yeah.
May 4th, 2009.
Bam! For
called
the win!
It.
Or lose, depending on whether you're Dom DeLuise or not.
Peter DeLuise is weeping openly into a copy of Cannonball Run, but that's fine.
All right, so there's the Tourist, the Passenger.
The Tourist and Chronicles of Narnia. The movie people should go see, though, that's actually really good, that opens in Portland today, is Black Swan.
That's the new Aronofsky thing.
Yeah, with Natalie Portman as a ballerina.
It's one of those things where the collection of talent there is such that you don't doubt it, but you hear things like, well, they're saying it's his best ever, and it's an Oscar contender, but I tend to believe it, because that guy doesn't make... Even his bad movies are interesting.
Right, and this is... I've seen it twice, and it's fantastic. It's easily on my top 10 for the year. Natalie Portman plays this ballerina. She gets a chance to be in Swan Lake. And, of course, as you know from your extensive knowledge of the ballet...
Of course.
Yes.
The lead role in Swan Lake is a dual role. She plays the White Queen and plays the White Swan and the Black Swan. And her director knows that she is great for the White Swan, because she's very precise and on time, lives a clean life, doesn't have any fun. She's very serious about ballet. But he doesn't know if she's, like, loose and free enough to be the Black Swan. And she has to access that side of her.
So she is too. She's very left-brained,
yes,
but has trouble
right.
Operating in a non-linear.
Right.
Capacity.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
And
okay.
So she has to access that dark side of her. And there's also another dancer, Mila Kunis, who is perfect for the Black Queen. And so Natalie Portman feels
the Berkeley to her Gershon.
Yes. Thank you.
I know what I'm doing over here.
And so she feels threatened by that. So it's sort of about stage fright. It's about the striving for perfection, and it's a psychological thriller. And you, it's tense because you know bad things are going to happen, but it's great because you don't know what kind of bad things.
Is it is it sort of bizarre or surreal in the way that Aronofsky films sometimes are, where Pi comes immediately to mind, where it's presumably grounded in some sort of mathematical reality, but at the same time it's like this insane sort of imaginative take
it
on the
is,
whole thing?
Somewhere along those lines. I what I like about it is that going in, I didn't, you know, you don't know what kind of... Usually going to a movie, you kind of know what sort of horror to expect.
Right.
Like a Saw movie, there's going to be blood and guts and cutting things off or whatever. In Black Swan, you feel the tension, and you know it could be something as ordinary as, oh, a dancer's going to break her ankle or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
Or it could be that dragons fly out of the sky and carry her off. Like either way on that spectrum, it seems possible in this world, and you just don't know what to expect.
Another thing you hear all the time about movies, and I've heard it about this, is that you always hear, well, it's his passion project, or this is the thing that he's been working to get made for 10 years, like with Inception, you heard that.
Right.
Or that this is the movie that really, like, this is his personal story he's telling. Is that, I mean, do you
know? I know it took a long time to get it made because of financing and various other problems. And I read that he, if you see Black Swan and if you've seen The Wrestler, you'll see there are many similarities, parallels in the stories.
Right.
And I read that he originally intended to be sort of one movie of like these two, you know, parallel stories
right.
of these artists punishing their bodies for their work. So you can see that. I know it took a long time to get it made, which makes sense because the movie is all about like this strive for excellence and like beating yourself up to get. it wouldn't have the same impact if it had just been some Hollywood out of the factory movie. It makes more sense that you can sort of see his swollen, bloody ankles in the process of making it.
Well, you hear all the time about ballerinas will talk about. You know what a huge physical grind it is,
oh,
and
yeah.
they always talk about with the swollen and bleeding feet and the whatever, and that now that I think about it, that's a thing that I've always heard described, but I don't really ever think I've seen a piece of entertainment that actually shows the reality of it. Yeah,
lots of close-ups of the feet and they're.
So
you definitely get a sense for how difficult it is, and it's a great movie.
Black Swan, so that opens, that's in Portland
it
today?
Is, I think it's at Fox Tower, I think on two screens.
Awesome. So there you go. So that's Black Swan. And then Voyage of the Dawn Treader, which I will not be seeing, because it looks terrible. And also because, and I shouldn't do this. See, this is a horrible thing, and I shouldn't say this out loud, but this is a program which we deal in honesty here. Can I just tell you, this is a horrible thing, and this is equal parts about me and about some of the more aggressively religious and Christian in this example. Some of the more aggressively Christian segments of our society, that when the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out, the first of the Chronicles of Narnia movies, they did this whole thing of like aggressively marketing it through churches
right.
and having screenings at churches. And I know this is wrong because I know I'm doing that thing of like. As Aaron Sorkin would say, I am failing to separate the stuff from the stuff. I am punishing the song for the behavior of the singer, and I'm punishing the band because I don't like their audience and whatever. I'm doing all that, but that can I tell you that immediately put me up because it was right on the heels of the whole Passion of the Christ thing too. Mm-hmm. I think, and it just made me feel like excluded, like right out of the gate, and I got really angry about it, and I just refused to see the movie out of that, which is ridiculous because I've read those books. I've read the entire series probably 5 or 10 times.
Oh, really?
Over my life. Yeah, when I was young, that was one of the first things my sister, who taught me to read when I was very, very young, and she instilled in me, I have to give her all the credit in the world, she instilled a love of books in me. She said that she loved television, and there was nothing wrong with that, but as she told me later, she said the whole thing is with kids, it's a race to see who gets to them first, television or books. Mm. And she said that, the television always wins by default in America. And so her whole thing was to make sure that books got there first, which she did.
Nice.
And I read The Chronicles of Narnia and loved them. And they're very much, they're for children, obviously, but they're great. They're sort of heavy-handed when you read them now. They're not as nuanced, certainly, as The Lord of the Rings or whatever. But I really wanted those movies to come out and to see them. And then I just didn't because I felt like the marketing was so exclusionary and focusing so heavily on the Christian community and ignoring everybody else. So
yeah, it kind of made it seem like it was just for those people, and
right.
so other people, yeah.
Which is too bad because Voyage of the Dawn Treader is widely considered the best of the books, might be the best of the movies.
It?
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any of the movies.
It's the best of the movies, but not by much, and that isn't saying much.
Yeah. So
I thought it was churches that had a problem with Narnia because there was a intense kind of.
Well, maybe then. I mean, yeah. maybe back in the 80s, whenever. They might have had a problem with it in the 80s because the 80s, of course, that was the big time when everything was a Satan scare.
No,
everything
I mean,
was
yeah.
witchcraft.
Chronicles of Narnia has always been pretty, faithful Christian. Are you thinking of Golden Compass? That was a series
there
of children's
some,
books.
Might have been
that turns out to be with an atheist message
yeah.
that upset people. But yeah, Chronicles of Narnia is pretty.
It's a straight ahead. Oh, it's a Christian. Yeah, it's an allegory. It's very. I mean, and here's a funny thing. We can turn into book nerds really easily on the show. One of the reasons I am no longer on KUFO, incidentally, just a little too smart, which is the actual phrase that was used, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, that was not me that came up with that phrase. It was. Somebody else.
Nice.
Often in reference to Dawn or other women who were on the program, by the way. You can draw your own conclusions. But Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, they were friends.
Yeah.
And they would have these sort of these like long lunches and they would, exchange letters and whatever. And they used to fight all the time about allegory versus applicability, because Tolkien hated allegory. He felt that if something – he says because the people used to say that Sauron was Hitler. And Tolkien was like, Sauron is just Sauron. He's not anybody. It's a story. And he's like, if you can take it and apply it to your own life or find something there that echoes your own experience, great. He's like
– That's what great literature does.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, if you can find deeper meaning or symbolism of your own, fantastic. But when I write it, it's just a story. It is what it is. And he loathed allegory, thought it was a ham-handed technique for hacks. But C.S. Lewis felt exactly – C.S. Lewis, who, of course, in Pilgrim's Progress – which is like the most heavy-handed book ever written. It is about a man's search for – it's about Lewis's own search for Christianity and him finding himself and going from being a rationalist to being a Christian – And it's like about this guy named Pilgrim who grows up in a land named Puritania. I mean, it's like right out of the gate. It's like right. The most.
His name was Pilgrim.
Yeah, and in Puritania, and it's just like so clumsily done. Narnia is not that ham-fisted about it, but it is very much. I mean, there is a. It terrified me when I was a kid. There's a very scary crucifixion scene,
mm-hmm.
and it's not an actual crucifixion, but it is Aslan, who of course is Jesus, who is God. And there's a scene where the forces of evil, they tie him to a stone table and they shave his head and they kill him. And it was very, very yeah. scary when I was a kid. But then, of course, he is resurrected. And then there's this. And then the last book in the series, the second to last book, talks about, which is the magician's nephew, describes how Aslan created all of the animals of Narnia and gave them the gift of speech. I mean, it's a very sort of beautiful biblical allegory in its way. But I think that has lent itself to it. It has become a sort of divisive book, and I just don't like to see that happen to things.
Well, I read *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe* actually for the first time as an adult before the movie came out, and I was actually bored with it because having read the New Testament, I knew what was going to happen.
Right,
like
right.
You pick up the parallels, and like, oh, okay, well, there's no dramatic tension because I know what's
sure.
where it's going.
Yeah, and I think
like
that was
because it's such a close parallel.
And that was Lewis's whole thing: he was so bent on creating theological works for people who didn't read the Bible or who would refuse to read the Bible. That was like, you know, and one of my favorite books of all time is The Screwtape Letters.
Oh, yeah.
Which is I've the same that. Thing, where The Screwtape Letters is just, and I don't know if anybody out there has not read The Screwtape Letters, it's an amazing book. It is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on. We'll get to the jokes here in a moment. The Screwtape Letters, which I cannot recommend strongly enough, it's an epistolary book. It's just a series of letters back and forth. In fact, I think it's actually just one way.
Yeah, it's an underdevil writing to the devil.
It is, yeah. It is a demon named Screwtape writing to his nephew Wormwood, who is an apprentice devil.
That's right.
Apparently the premise of the book is that every human is paired with a demon, or every demon is assigned a human. And every human has an angel and a demon who are sort of whispering in his ear throughout his life, trying to pull him to God or to Satan. And so the whole book is a series of letters from Screwtape, who's the elder demon, to his nephew Wormwood, giving him advice on how to handle his patient, his mm-hmm. human, how to gently lead him away from God and to damnation. And it was, it's a great book because it is an examination of the insidious and subtle seduction that evil can possess for you.
It's remarkably insightful about the way that that our minds work and just about mankind. I kept reading it every page. I'm like, oh yeah,
yeah,
that is how that works. Yeah,
it's.
I thought that was just me.
And I think it was written during World War II, I believe.
I think so.
Sort of during like the kind of Blitz era when it was like the worst of humanity being shown, and Lewis had this whole thing about wanting to show people how evil gets root, how it gets a hold of you, mm-hmm. And that it's not by shouting at you, it's by whispering to you and by making you think, and by making you think that, what did he say, that the surest road to hell is the gentle sloping path underfoot. So anyway, boobs.
Bob Denver died in 2005, by the way.
All right. Really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
5 years ago. Five years I've had to memorize, to learn, to file away the fact that he's dead, and I didn't do it.
Sorry.
All right. This is all true. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. We'll head toward the thrilling, gripping conclusion of this program here in just a bit. Without further ado, we want to welcome, for this segment anyway, our good friend Mr. Big Jim Willig, who joins us every Friday to talk about the life, legacy, and impact of a given comic, comedian. And we have talked about Sam Kinison so far, Mr. Don Rickles, and right out of the gate, I believe, our first...
Bill Cosby
was our first subject. Today we talk about Ms. Carol Burnett. Without further ado, Jim Willig. Hello, sir.
Hello. Comedy has always been the great equalizer, because all ages, genders, religions, and sex have the power to be funny. Welcome to another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, the refuge for all great pioneers of laughter. Pioneers like Carol Burnett. Now, if comedy ever had a mom, it would be Carol Burnett. It has been said that from pain comes comedy, and Miss Burnett is no exception. Born in San Antonio, Texas, to severely alcoholic parents, Carol was raised by her grandmother in a boarding house just outside of Hollywood. First establishing herself as a solo talent on the Jack Parr and Ed Sullivan shows, Carol is best remembered for her timeless sketch comedy program, The Carol Burnett Show. Carol showed me that with one voice, you can fill a room, and with four, you can tear the roof off the joint. Now, with that, I will turn the spotlight to the two people sharing the room with me, Mr. Rick Emerson and Mr. Eric D. Snyder. Your thoughts on Carol Burnett?
I will actually say right out of the gate here that, I feel like a jerk every time I say this. I have never found Carol Burnett that funny. And I wonder...
You're dead to me.
And you feel like such a jerk saying it, you know? It's like I even actually lowered my voice just now.
Like you didn't want the listeners to hear.
She was in town a couple years ago. I don't know if she was actually touring or if she was just doing maybe speaking or just doing a book or something. But we tried to get her on the show, and I was sort of equal parts glad and sad that we didn't, because I recognize that she's a pioneer and how important she is. And maybe I need to go. It might be a thing that I need to go back and watch the Carol Burnett Show again or some of her earlier work, because there's something about it never resonated with me. And Carol Burnett, I am not disputing her importance, but I don't know that I can say that I ever really watched her and just found myself laughing or found myself really amused by her.
Comedy is subjective, so I mean,
absolutely,
it's like, you know, if you don't get it, you can still acknowledge the fact that it does have comedic merit.
Right.
When did she first start? So you said the Jack Parr show. That would have been like the 60s.
Yeah.
That would have been the early 60s.
And then her show, the Carol Burnett Show, was in the 70s. I guess the first half of the 70s, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Her show,
late 70s.
Was it late 70s? Somewhere in the 70s. I remember watching, it would have been the reruns of that show, like in the early 80s. It'd be on afternoon TV or whatever.
Actually, 1967 was the very first one with Jim Nabors was on the very first episode.
Carol Burnett Show?
Mm-hmm.
To how long did it run?
It ran, I think, 11 years, so
okay,
78.
So mostly through the 70s. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I remember seeing those reruns in the afternoon, and what I loved as a budding young comedy nerd was, of course, when they would break character, laugh during the sketches,
right.
And that was always the funniest thing, because you don't see that on the sitcoms or whatever. Obviously, they edit it out, but to see, and the fact that they could have edited it out of this, because not like the show was done live,
yeah,
it didn't air live. They could have fixed that or redone it, but they chose not to because they knew it was funnier.
See, in that moment, comedy is, not to sound too hokey, but in that moment, comedy is alive. The fourth wheel, mm-hmm. the fourth wall is gone, and everyone in the room kind of can share in that moment, as opposed to scripting something in a room many, many miles away.
Well, and normally when people are being funny in a sketch or a sitcom, they don't find each other funny. Like, the audience laughs, but the characters don't find each other funny, and that's part of the thing is you don't laugh at your own jokes. And there's something nice to see funny people laugh at other funny people, to see that, like you said, it's a great equalizer. We all have a sense of humor. We all can laugh, even these funny people. It's kind of nice to see, to bond that way with, like, oh, we all think this is funny.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because, see, you know, this is why I love this segment. This is why, this is why this show is just, you know, for the almost 13 years I've been doing it, this show is just endlessly fascinating to me, because I am always, like, I'm always learning stuff or seeing things in sort of a different way. And I had actually never, really put together that fact that the Carol Burnett Show, I mean, you know, you saw it on talk shows and stuff, but the Carol Burnett Show was maybe the first time that you saw the actors just losing it and breaking characters, which maybe now I take, it's sort of like it's like living in a post-Hendrix world where you take feedback for granted. Taking that for granted because I grew up with those shows.
Right.
And as much as I maybe, and maybe I found it funny when I was younger, but as much as I look back now and I say, well, I didn't, it was still always on in the house. It was always on. My parents were always watching it. It seemed to always be playing. And I think you've hit on something there. I think maybe the reason that show was always on when I was growing up, and I don't remember who it was that would have been watching, it was somebody, but it was also just sort of a comforting presence because they were having a good time.
Exactly.
And therefore, you were having a good time watching them.
And the groundwork was set at the very beginning of every episode, where she would come out from behind the curtain and have a Q&A session with the audience.
Right.
And, you know, at that point in time, you knew that, you know, other shows like, you know, Carson or everything else, late night shows where you would have a guest comic or maybe a house comic come out and sort of warm the audience up, get them kind of laughing, get them kind of interacting and everything else. And then, like, what you would see at home would be everything that happened after that. Like, she brought that to the forefront. And then, like you said, make those moments where you could sit at a typewriter for a million years and never come up with something as funny as that moment where mm-hmm. the wheels officially come off and all bedlam breaks loose. And then what happens from that point on, nobody knows, not even the actors on stage.
And to see that these actors, as good as they are, as skilled and polished as they are, they're still not above just finding something funny.
Right. Exactly.
And they did do, I will actually say this, and I'm actually being forced to sort of revise my opinion on the fly here, because that, the thing about breaking the fourth wall, I had never really thought about that. And they did really, I mean, in terms of physical comedy, there really was some brilliance there. I remember Tim Conway doing a sketch for a product, it was like a fake commercial for a product called Mighty Glue. And it's sort of an obvious setup that he's demonstrating how great it is, but by the end of the sketch, of course, everything in the room is stuck to him.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the sort of thing that is so simple that it could go wrong really easily. And it could end up just being like, oh, I get it. It's going to be. And then it could be like the Donnie Marie show or something.
Yeah. It takes a master's touch to be able to really pull out something that you wouldn't see coming.
There was some sketch where it was, if it was like a period piece or something, but Carol Burnett's character, she was coming down in like she wanted a very regal gown with like broad shoulders. And
it was
like literally like
the wind
curtain rod.
That's one of the most famous ones.
I remember seeing that and that's the thing that has stuck with me forever.
It had to do with, it's a parody of Gone with the Wind where someone suggests making a dress out of the curtains. So she actually puts the curtains like with the rod and everything. Yeah.
When I saw, I think we were talking about this maybe in Legion of News because you were talking about Dick Van Dyke having to cancel a show. About 2-3 years ago, I had one of those moments in your life where you have to. Jerry Seinfeld says this great thing in the movie Comedian, which I love, where he's going to see Bill Cosby. And Seinfeld says this thing. He says, did you ever think that life could be so long that you would actually, you know, get to go meet Bill Cosby? You know? And I, 3 years ago, myself and Mr. Tim Riley, we got to introduce, at the Keller, I believe, we get to introduce Corman and Conway. On their last tour ever. Harvey Corman and Tim Conway were doing, which in retrospect, I think Corman, it came out later, had sort of wanted to do one final one because he knew he was like not long for this for this world. And Tim Riley and I got to introduce, I get chills actually thinking, I mean, meeting those guys backstage, and we got to say like, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Conway, Harvey Corman, and you don't get to do that very much in your life. I mean, it was amazing. There's actually waiting in the wings to go on to introduce them. And, you know, we've all done stage stuff. And you're standing off and waiting for the guy to give you your signal and to go out in front of the crowd. And, you know, I think it's the Keller, but there's, you know, there's multiple curtains. There's the crowd out here, then the stage, and then there's the first curtain, and then like a scrim, and then a second curtain.
Right.
So there's this area between the two curtains. And a memory that I will take with me forever is standing in the wings, off stage right, waiting to go out and introduce them. And I don't know where Conway was, but looking back between the two curtains, and it was just sort of like a dark silhouette because the stage, you know, the backstage lights were off. But seeing Corman, hands behind his back, sort of threaded together, head down, and just doing this back and forth pace of about 5 or 6 feet, clearly like a pre-show ritual. And that's a thing that, like, every performer has a pre-show ritual, and that's kind of an intimate thing. It's just one of those things you see, and you realize you're seeing something that most people don't get to see, and it is a very, you know, it's just, it is a, it's a look behind the curtain, literally, but also just in a figurative way that you don't ever get to experience, and an unguarded moment of a performer right before he goes on. It was just a great thing. But he was like 85, and I got to tell you, the physical comedy they did, and the quick, lightning-fast verbal interplay, and a lot of those skits. See, now I guess I really have been looking at it through the wrong prism, because most of those skits they did, a lot of them were lifted right out of the Burnett show.
I'm sure.
You know, and the thing with the dentist with the anesthetic that goes into his own
epic
leg.
Yeah.
That was what they ended with. That was their free bird. They ended
classic,
with that.
Yeah.
Conway doing a sketch where he's on a mic as an airport attendant and the mic is shorting out, but he's simulating it just by of doing these conversations. And it was just, you know, it was really brilliant. And she has to get all that credit for bringing that whole group together.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing was with the show, with a name like, you know, with a name for a show like The Carol Burnett Show, it'd be easy to say that she has the iron fist over everything and, like, nothing can get on the air without her gainsay. But she had said that she had one of the most incredible, like, egoless writers ever. Like, so they would come up with these sketches, and they'd be trying to work them out, and they're like, this just isn't working. She'd bring the writers in, and they'd be like, okay, what can we do to kind of work this out? And as a unit, they would come together. And that's why I think that show really, still to this day, can still stand the test of time and really have those moments that you can't find on, like, you know, your average TV nowadays, or even like a couple years back.
Right.
Something like that only comes around every once in a while, and to have an experience like that and have it tied to you in some way, you know, that goes beyond sheer entertainment into life changing.
What is she doing? Does anybody know kind of what she's up to now? She sort of fell off the radar.
No, she's around. I know she showed up on like Law and Order SVU or something a couple years ago as a crazy woman. And there's recently been, now the new push is to get her to host Ask Saturday Night Live after the success with Betty White.
Yeah.
And there's a grassroots effort for Carol Burnett, which would be great.
It's interesting you say that, because one of Lorne Michaels, when Lorne Michaels was constructing SNL, he used the Carol Burnett show as an anti-model because he disliked that show so much. Particularly the breaking the fourth wall and the giving the characters sort of funny names, which it was clearly like that is clearly like a rule that lapsed early on
SNL. Yeah,
really. But about the time Lisa Loebner was on the screen and the wide ends that is telling how important she is. That it's not like she's out there doing stuff or pimping new projects or rolling out books and movies. Yeah. And yet she has like name recognition that penetrates to like 98%.
And I bet even if Lorne Michaels at the time, I can see his objection to the show, wanting to be counterculture. But I would bet money that he respects the show and respects her now.
Absolutely.
Like, I can't see why they wouldn't have her host the show if she would do it.
Yeah, I mean, perfect blend. As you said, they were very much trying to just be the anti-whatever at that point. But the work speaks for itself and the legacy. You can't really knock that. And plus, apparently, I'm going to get to see her in the next couple weeks on the television of my home because my wife has informed me that I must see Annie. So,
totally. Yeah, Miss Hannigan.
Yeah.
I mean, that is like one of her, shiniest moments. What something that I found on IMDb that I thought was really interesting was just to sort of give you an idea where some people be like, well, you know, I'm sure she had her moments in the sun or whatever. I mean, but like her influence was kind of like in a microcosm. At age 10, Jim Carrey sent her his resume because he was so moved by the show that
That's
he wanted
awesome.
To be. In some way a part of it. So he's just like, age 10, boom, comedian Jim Carrey, what have you. That alone will tell you that, okay, so the guy that you're plunking down $15, dollars to go see in the movie theaters, he got his, initial spark from, people like Carol Burnett.
You know what else about the way that she is, even though she's not around much anymore, everyone knows who she is and what she does. It's so ingrained in our culture that everyone not only knows about pulling on her ear, everyone even knows what that means. Like, even that is common knowledge, which is saying hi to her grandmother.
Right.
What was originally a secret signal, everyone knows it.
Well, all right. So I'm basically an ass. That's the upshot here. I have now, but I mean, really, that is, you guys have turned me around. You really have. You have completely turned me around. I will actually.
I want to go watch some of those shows now.
I was just going to say, this weekend, look, I'm going to be in Provo. I got time to spare.
Yes, you do.
It's like, it's like being in the city on the edge of tomorrow or whatever. There's just a dome and it's just time stops. So I got a lot. And it's either that or Glenn Beck, basically, in that house.
Oh,
so
once you either, you can either go for the insane comedy or the Carol Burnett.
Bam!
There you go.
For the win!
This has been Humor Me Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Find out more about him at facebook.com/Jim Willig. And then as we get close to the turn of the year, you're going to be performing, you're going to be headlining at the Baghdad, yes?
That's great. January 14th, I will be headlining at the Baghdad Theater on Hawthorne.
And we want to say that this segment, like much of the rest of the Rick Emerson radio program, is made possible by one of our fine business partners, Christmas Mountain Trees. That is Christmas Mountain Trees. And their website is ChristmasMountainTrees.com, and we are now at the 10th, so you got like 9 days left. They're going to be wrapping up business for the year. They got to grow the trees and tend the trees and all of that, but the actual selling of the trees, that ends December 19th, so you got to be doing it now. And we've been reading over the last couple of days this email from our listener Jason. He went up there. He went during the week, actually, said that, the crowd's a little smaller. On the other hand, it's a mountain, and it's 175 miles of trees. So space, it's not like you're really to maximum pressure up there.
I'd be surprised if it were ever crowded.
Yeah, congestion is not a problem.
If they are crowded, there's a problem.
That means the apocalypse has come. The zombies are here. I should ask that guy now if that can be my refuge during the zombie apocalypse. But this is really the best time to go to because it's crisp and it's cool outside, a little cold in the morning, but it's not snowy. There's no ice, so you get the great enemy. I got to tell you, the view of this place. I mean, you think to yourself, well, the trees are, just a swath of green. I mean, first of all, you see 85,000 trees in one place is astonishing. But then past that, you can see Hood, you can see Rainier, and you can see St. Helens from the top. I mean, it's like the view is just like endless. And it's a family farm. That's a thing we talk about a lot in America. We sort of give lip service sometimes to supporting a family business or a family. This is an actual family farm. grandfather started in 1942, going up, you know, cutting down trees on Mount Hood, bringing them back and selling them. And then they got the farm. And, you know, that's forward thinking because you plant those trees and it's 10 years before you can sell the first crop. So they did that, you know, in the 60s. They've been doing it since, you know, since 1961, I think. And now you can go up there with your family, your loved ones. You just have it, you know, make it, you know, a day out of it. A few hours you go up, you have yourself a cup of something hot. You have your cider. You wait for, and they've got the three sort of wagons that are going through constantly, so you never have to wait too long.
Love that.
And they will take you to every different section of this farm. And it's not like a farm where it's like, you know, where it feels industrial and where it feels like it's fenced off. I mean, it's just a huge mountain covered in trees. And you get out, and I mean, Dawn went, and you know, my wife went, and Patrick was there. We had several listeners who went, and it was just, it's just the most amazing thing. Because you can walk around and just be surrounded by thousands of the most beautiful trees you've ever seen in your life. And then finally you just go like, that one right there, that's perfect. And you know what? And they by the time you get down to the mountain, you get yourself your second cup of you know, of the hot chocolate or coffee or whatever. They've got the tree there. They're taking the needles off. They're wrapping it up, putting it in your car. You go home. We got Cheryl right now decorating the tree in the kitchen, which came from Christmas Mountain Trees. So I cannot speak highly enough. They're open to the 19th. Find out more by going to facebook.com/Christmas Mountain or ChristmasMountainTrees.com. We'll do one final break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up with Mr. Jim Willig and Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who have been gracious enough to spend part of their day and their week with us. So thank you. We'll finish this on the other side. You stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The snow is snowing and the wind it is blowing, but I can weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. I cannot remember the worst December. Just watch those icicles fall. What do I care if icicles fall? I've got my love to keep me warm. Off with my overcoat, off with my glove. Who needs an overcoat? I'm burning with love. My heart's on fire and the flame grows higher. So I will weather the storm. Why do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. I thought you ought to know my heart's on fire. The flames, they just leap higher. So I will weather the storm. Why do I care how much it storms? I've got my love to keep me warm. I've got my love to keep me warm.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Oh, that's just unnerving.
Thank you.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Mr. Eric D. Snyder. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter. He is at Eric D. Snyder or ericdsnyder.com. Mr. Big Jim Willig. Are you on Twitter?
I am not.
Really?
Yes.
You're right to be away. You stay
that's
away from
right.
me. You're right not to do it. You wouldn't even believe the insane conversation David Walker and I had yesterday. David Walker and I, because it turns out that he and I are both Twitter. I mean, I use it, but I kind of only know the one function. I mean, I need to, like, type things about myself and send so that other people may know how awesome I am. But there's, like, the trending and the hashtagging and the whatever. And it's like he has a Twitter account because somebody told him how to get one, and then he's, like, never used it.
Right.
And so we were just so confused. And listeners were, like, texting and calling. And this our listener called up. And he was, like, our listener, Andy, called up. And was desperately trying to explain it, like he was speaking to, like, you know, an inquisitive child who's just never going to learn the thing. But he was being very patient with us. And I think finally he just, he was so exasperated that I asked one question, like one dumb question too many. And Andy finally went, look, I'm just a baker. And he hung up the phone. That was worth the entire thing to get to that exasperated sign off. By nice. The way, I should note that in the kitchen just now, well, let me back up a second. I should say just now that Eric D. Snyder, who blah, 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 Twitter, that's how we got off the particular road. I'm working my way back. On your iPad as we're coming back, you showed us photos of, I swear to God, Sophia Loren and Jeff Goldblum. And you're right. It's like a Brundle Loren.
Yeah, I noticed it a while back. And so I,
Nicely done.
I put together this montage, and I remembered where it was. So, yeah.
In retrospect, the comedy would have been Brundle Soph. That's what I should have done. Well, one syllable there.
Still, you know? I mean, still, you basically took a stick with a nail in it to my libido when it came to that. I mean,
sorry.
Really, just...
It's no good.
It's not any better close up, either.
No. See, and that's with makeup in a good light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no. It worked.
Yeah, you don't want to...
Sorry.
I don't know. I just thought we would have some sex. You know, just we'd go back to my room and you could take off my garters. Yes.
And yet the thing is, Jeff Goldblum, good-looking man.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. It's like what works. That's like when you see the male, like the what are they, what are the... is it identical twins or what? Not identical.
Fraternal.
But yeah, but it's like a boy and a girl.
Right.
Brother, sister, and they both kind of look the same. And you go, oh, it's working out well for one of you.
Yeah.
Not so for you, though, Ted.
You're going to be a longshoreman.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Sorry, Sophia.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. As we wrap this up, I want to say that Cheryl was in the kitchen just now decorating our holiday tree, and it looked fantastic. And we joked about this last hour during Legion of News. I was talking about the you have to go through every light one by one because there's some jackass that has, like, broken one of the lights and it's not working. Apparently, I am that jackass. She texted me last night. She's like, hey, I'm going to be decorating the tree. Can you bring in some lights? I'm like, yeah, I got a couple strands I'm not using. I don't know why, but I'm not using them. Apparently, it's because they are the old-ass kind that, like, if one light is loose, none of the whole thing doesn't work. So she said that it was the very last light on the strand.
Oh.
The dead-ass last light on the strand that she had to go through and, you know, and check. So, I'm sorry. Rick Emerson regrets the error.
Seriously, she was one light away from coming in here and garroting you. Just throwing it around your neck.
Well, here's the thing. If she hasn't done that by now, I mean, really, the amount of time that we have worked together now and the number of times that I have really just been asking for it, you know, and that she hasn't, you know, she hasn't given it to me. I mean, if she hasn't punched me by now, it's probably not going to happen. I mean, not that I won't keep trying, but...
she's hatchet friendly.
Exactly. As we wrap this up, we will turn the studio over to... Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio here in just a moment. FunEmploymentRadio.com. That show will be posted around 6 p.m. tonight. I will be their guest, by the way. That'll be posted at FunEmploymentRadio.com about 6 p.m. Pacific time today, the 10th, Friday, December. I will be the guest, and they'll have Ball Talk, World of Crazy, all of their regular stuff, and probably drink. If you guys want, if you're a malt liquor enthusiast, there'll probably be some of that here in a few.
Oh, well, hello.
So that is coming up. I do want to say, as we get ready to head towards the end here, I mentioned this earlier on, I think, in Legion of News, that as we look toward the end of December and getting into 2011, it has really been, I don't want to say it's been a tumultuous year, because that's, I mean, this week has been a little crazy, a little chaotic, but it's been, it hasn't been a bad year, it's been a year that is very, I mean, it's been very, it's been a roller coaster. I mean, it's such a cliche, but it's true. It's been, I can't even really think of anything bad that has gone wrong this year. You know, this week with Patrick has really, you know, that has been, you know, it's been a stressful time, and we're hoping that everything comes out on the, you know, that we all come out right on the, you know, the other end of this. And it sounds like now it's a question with him of just figuring out what is wrong, because they've already ruled out some of the, you know, some of the more awful things. So hopefully, you know, everything ends well there. This year in general has been very, you know, very busy, very hectic.
Does it seem like it ran by?
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, it's been a little stress-inducing, you know, but in a good way. And as I always say to people, I'd rather be too busy than not busy enough.
Yeah.
And this year has been that. And But the fact that we are able to bring the show back in this iteration, in this version, and to be keeping it self-contained and keeping it free from, just the sort of vagaries of the uncertainties of the radio industry, format changes and corporate upheavals and consolidation or whatever. It's like we're free of that, and that is due to our listeners and to our business partners, like Castalia Language Center. You can find them at PortlandSpanish.com, PortlandSpanish.com. They are a Spanish language facility for adults. So if you are, somebody, you didn't learn it in school, you're now as an adult, you want to pick up on it, you're going to be traveling, you're going to be doing, maybe you're going to be moving, or you're just going to be vacationing, or you want to learn something else as you get older to keep your brain in shape. And there are a few things to do that, like learning a language. Here's what you do. You go to PortlandSpanish.com, you contact them, and you thank Clara Grebel for her support and for everything she's done for us over 2010. So we owe Clara and all of our business partners a huge thanks for helping to make this whole thing possible, as well as for all you guys who are listening. So, PortlandSpanish.com. That is how you can contact Castalia Language Center. As we head into the weekend, anything you guys, is there anything you guys need to pimp, promote, talk about, push people toward, shamelessly endorse?
I'd like to gloat that I'm seeing True Grit tonight.
Oh,
bastard!
Just gloating. You can't see it with me. I just want you to know that I am seeing
it. Thanks so much for that. Why do you just dangle the bright, shiny object and then you snatch it away?
Sorry.
All right, Jim Willig?
I have in my open mic, which I host every Saturday. This will be at the Shamrock, which is at 4919 Southeast 82nd Avenue. It's right between the IHOP and the Don Pedro's. Sign-up starts around 8:30. Show starts around 9:30. If you want to come and try out your comedy expertise, by all means, please come on down. There's no drink minimum. There's no cover charge. You can just sit and laugh if you want to. And that's the Shamrock tomorrow, Saturday night, at starting around 9 o'clock.
And we will talk to you again next Friday for another installment of Comedy 101.
Absolutely.
Eric D. Snyder, we will have you back again in the near future. Undoubtedly, you can hear Eric Snyder at Cascadia.fm live Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific time, but you can also download it there as well. It's on iTunes, and you can find out more about all of his many projects and endeavors at ericdsnyder.com. And to both of you guys, really, again, just for me, for Don, for the listeners, for everybody, thank you so much for coming in and helping us out this week. It has been a little bit crazy, a little bit stressful, and that's probably not entirely over, but it has been as stressful as this week might have been in some ways. It would have been infinitely more so had you not helped that and been so fantastic. So
our pleasure.
Thank you to both of you. If you guys wanted to keep up with everything that's going on with Dawn Taylor this weekend, she's on Facebook, she's on Twitter, and you can email her as well, dawn@rickemerson.com, dawn@rickemerson.com. Don't forget, I will be gone on Monday. We'll be doing some stuff in the archives and some possibly some live hosting of that by other folks. But that is Monday the 13th, and we're back to normal on Tuesday the 14th. In the wrong button. In the meantime, in between time, we thank you for listening. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. Our guests today have included Mr. Eric D. Snyder and Mr. Jim Willig. After a brief musical encore, we will have an encore, brief musical interlude. We will have an encore of today's Legion of News radio program, followed by an encore of this very fine radio show, and so forth. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday at the studio, at the news desk in the studio, Mr. Eric D. Snyder, and for Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Ganakoa, and this program is also made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for being out there. It is Friday, December 10th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, have a good weekend. Be safe. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye now.